Hello and welcome to a new episode of Code and Beyond, a podcast where we talk about software development and anything beyond that. As software engineers, we're usually really good at solving problems, well, at least software problems. We know how to solve them. Sometimes along the way, we create even more problems, which we usually decide to fix later, and we call it technical debt. The topic of today is problem solving, and we are going to share our tips and tricks on that matter. My name is Alex, and as usual, I am joined by my good friend Pablo. Hi, Pablo.
Hello, Alex.
Before we jump on the main topic, I think it would be fair to mention that already for a couple of weeks, there is a website on the internet with address codeandbeyond.rocks, codeandbeyond one word, where you could find old episodes and some info about the podcast itself and about us as well. So please go ahead and check it out. The main topic is problem solving, and we decided not to have any particular structure today, but have Q&A kind of tips and tricks style episode. So we will just bomb you with our ideas and our solutions to some problems about problem solving. So how we do it? Maybe we could imagine that we have a problem that we need to solve, and it's something related to software engineering and not the problem in the real world.
Let's just start with I know nothing about the program, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing is kind of a breadth search of possible solutions, right?
Mm-hmm.
You try to find different approaches to solve the problem and see which ones apply better to your current infrastructure, current team, mm-hmm. current application that you have in place.
You basically look for existing solutions.
That's the first thing I tend mm-hmm. to do, yes. One problem that I find is when you're doing this breadth search,
mm-hmm.
is time, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because you can find a lot of different solutions to the same problem. And if you want to go deeper in each of them, probably you're going to spend too much time.
Mm-hmm.
So here we can start to talk about time boxing.
Okay.
What I like to do is time box the search. So let's say I found three approaches
mm-hmm.
that look promising, but I still don't have enough information about them.
Mm-hmm.
So I will assign some time to investigate each of them. So let's call it ABC. So A is going to be 1 hour, another hour for B, another hour for C. And that means I'm going to read about these solutions or approaches. And if I can, I'm going to try to think how to apply them to my problem and my architecture. And maybe I even managed to write a couple of lines of code, like kind not pseudo code, but kind of
a tiny prototype.
Yeah, kind of a prototype if mm-hmm. if the time is enough. If not, sometimes you just only have some conclusions, ideas, and how to mm-hmm. continue. Usually after that time, you should have a better understanding. Probably you're able to discard one of them, or maybe one of them is super, super promising or already fits really well with your problem. If not, you have to time box again and continue until mm-hmm. you find a nice path. That's how I usually start. Time boxing is critical because you can end up going down a rabbit hole if you don't time box it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how it's for you, but sometimes I find solutions interesting. One approach leads to another one or leads to another technology that I don't know about, and it looks also interesting. So I start to read about it. And then while you're reading about this new one, you find another new one that it also looks interesting. And at some point you find yourself far away from the project, the problem that you're trying to solve. And you lost track.
Yeah, you get a lot of new knowledge, like algorithms, I don't know, solutions, yeah. libraries, whatever. But yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand.
And in order to prevent that, when the time is finished, you should try to do like a, let's call it a quick retrospective.
Mm-hmm.
What did I learn? Am I closer to solve the problems? Or I just went down this rabbit hole and I didn't mm-hmm. learn anything about the problem. I learned a lot of stuff, but not the things that I really need and things like that. So yeah, time box, reflect on the things you did, replan, and make a decision.
How you decide? So let's say you have this A, B, and C approaches. How you decide which one is better, which one is not that bad, not that good?
part of the job is also finding criteria.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned before, one of the constraints usually is your current project, current architecture, your current team. You need to know the skills that you have in your team and you have yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to find the path of less effort.
Mm-hmm.
When I say less effort, it's like less coding. As you know, the best code you write is the one that you don't write. So yeah. If you don't have to write code, even better.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you even have to look at the price, right? If you're looking mm-hmm. for a solution that you don't plan to implement yourself, you have to explore different services. You have to also look at price and you have to compare it with your price, right? If mm-hmm. if you at the end you decide to go and implement it, that's developer time, which is also expensive. So yeah, that's another criteria that you can take into account. I don't know, that's part of the job, defining the criteria that are going to help you to discard one or other approach.
I would usually do this even before research. So when I have problem to solve, I try to limit myself and set the list of constraints, like 3 to 5 criteria which are important. And I do this also with time boxing. Again, just mm-hmm. not to overthink the problem. It helps me then to quicker decide on which path to choose in the end. If I have multiple options, which one fits better as possible solution, these constraints, they guide me in a way. Before this episode, we discussed possible things to discuss, and you mentioned this scientific method. What it is? I have no idea.
That was an advice that I got from my wife. So my wife used to be a academic researcher. They tend to follow the scientific method. You have a question to solve, in our case, a problem. You have an area that you want to research to solve this problem. And the way to go is create what they call a hypothesis. So, I don't know, if we talk about coding, you can say, okay, I need to solve this algorithm. And I think if I need to sort this array or whatever. If I apply this algorithm, I'm going to reduce the sorting time in X amount of milliseconds. That's a hypothesis, right?
Mm-hmm.
The idea is that then you test with experiments this hypothesis, analyze the data that you get, and try to refute your hypothesis. Instead of trying to confirm, you should try to find flaws in your approach.
Mm-hmm.
And if you manage to take it down, that's good because you can go for the next hypothesis and refine. And the cycle continues until you find one that it cannot be refuted. So it's a good one or it's solid enough.
Mm-hmm.
That helped me because before I took that approach or I at least think in that way, I tend to try to find things to confirm my hypothesis, right?
Mm-hmm.
I had a solution. I really like it because I spend time on it and I'm attached to it. So I need to find reasons to confirm that my solution is the good one.
Yeah.
And this goes the other way around. So the good thing is, that you try to find reasons to discard just your solution. So you're trying to find flaws and problems and things that don't work properly in your solution. And usually you end up with something a bit more solid.
The solution should be simpler in this case.
Yeah, yeah.
It helps you to focus on what's important and what is not.
How did you do it?
So I don't do the scientific method, as you could imagine already.
I don't do it like strictly, but it's like when I discover it, it's like, okay, I think I need to switch my way of approaching problems. I have to be more critic with my solutions and I have mm-hmm. to try to be more precise and things like that.
So what I do, let's call it non-scientific method, but I ask myself question why. I love this question. So let's say I have a problem, I have an idea for possible solution, and then I question every step of this solution, why it's there. Do I really need this? If the solution involves a library or service or third party something, I always question, do I really need this or not? Or could it be removed or replaced? Or I don't know, if I combine two simple things, would it be possible to replace this third party dependency, for example? And then in the end, it allows me to again have a simpler solution. I could give an example. some time ago, I was working on super small CLI application, and this application was supposed to do some work and then have an output as a file, just text file with some information inside. Right away, what I was thinking that this tool will write a file on the disk and I give name of this file when I run this tool in terminal. And then once I reached this, so I even, everything looked fine on paper and then in my head, so I started coding. Luckily, that was super tiny project, so just a few hours of work. But when I reached this phase, when I need to store this output, then I realized that, so when you work with file system, the place where you would like to put the file might not be accessible for write operations, or all sorts of things could happen that you must handle. And not just your script or your application handle this internally, but it also must communicate this to the users. User could take action on this. It's lots of cases to handle. And then I asked myself, do I really need this? Do I really need for this specific application to write a file? And then I decided, what if not? What if this application won't have this feature at all? So it means I don't need to pass this parameter. I don't need to care about file system operation at all. Then what solution was printing everything to standard output, which then I could see on the screen and read with my eyes. If I need a file, I just write it, like redirect this to a file in whatever place I would like. I could pipe it to multiple applications and do all sorts of operations, basically by deciding not to do some work. I got even more things I could actually have. And that was like, whoa, this is so cool. I decided not to do something and got extra bonuses for this.
I think there is a technique that is called five whys. When you have to do something, you ask you why, and then you have an answer, and then you have to you why again to that answer, and so on and so on, at least five times. And then you should arrive at the core of your problem.
That's the idea. Never tried this. I know this method exists, but never tried this.
Yeah, maybe I should give it a try.
Do you use pen and paper or some diagramming software, or I don't know, some software to make some sketches?
Yeah, it helps me to reason about the problems. So it always depends on the type of the problem, but I don't know, if you have to do some systems design, having the components, having arrows that show you how the components interact. If you have a specific scenario of a user interaction, things like sequence diagrams really help me to understand how the flow of the application goes. Understanding data models, I tend to use entity relationship diagrams, because it also helped me to understand how tables are related and things like that. So yeah, I like to use diagrams, and I don't use a lot pen and paper because my drawing is terrible. I use things like Plant UML. I know that you know very well. Sketching tools, things like that. I use my iPad for that. So not much pen and paper, but yes, I use diagram tools and similar. I do have a whiteboard in my office that I use from time to time when I need to brainstorm. But as I mentioned, my drawing is terrible. How about you? I know that you love diagrams.
Yeah. Cannot live without them. And with Plan UML, it's just awesome. They look a little bit ugly by default, but with some tinkering, you could make them look nice, so you could present them to other people. But for myself, when I just start with something and I need to collect ideas and evaluate them, I just use pen and paper, and it really helps. For me, it's important to see the problem. That's why I don't care if it's ugly or not, but I need these boxes. I don't care about typos sometimes.
Yeah, they really help me also, not only with problem solving, when I'm trying to understand a system. Writing it down and drawing the diagrams, I get a lot of those aha moments. When you are connecting the arrows, it's like, okay, now I understand this relation between these two components. I see it now.
Yeah.
Even with that, sometimes I find myself in the writing code phase and getting blocked. Not blocked, but sometimes I realize that my approach is not correct, quite late, so when I'm already writing code.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I learned over the time is that you don't have to, you shouldn't be too attached to your code. So it's okay to throw it and start again. That's something that took me some time to understand. Like when I was investing time in writing code, so going down one path that I already decided to go, and after X amount of time, I find that the approach is not as good as I thought because mm-hmm. X reasons. It was difficult to me to throw away that code and and start from scratch with a different approach. Where now I have to make it work. Now I already have way. I have to make it work.
It's psychologically hard, right? You invested time of your life into this code, but if you would think about this solution just on paper or on whiteboard, then it's not much. You just erase it, and
that's it's much cheaper.
But if you know already all major details or major steps of this solution and they are on this whiteboard or in your notebook, then writing code is much easier and it's faster. You protect yourself from this kind of cases. Then along the way, you realize, oh, that was completely wrong solution to the problem. Yeah. And now I have to wipe all this nice shiny code and start from scratch.
Now we are going to enter in the TDD realm. So when I was learning TDD, one of the things was, okay, the TDD is also a design tool. So the way you start to solve a problem is writing a test. But if you don't know anything about the design that you are trying to guide or enforce, your test can lead you to a completely wrong design.
Which will work, but might not be optimal.
Yeah, that's the thing. So these days, my approach, I still do a fair amount of TDD, but I tend to do some upfront design before. So at least I have a clear picture that about where I want to go. And then I use the TDD to guide the design that I already have in my head. And with TDD, you discover a lot of flaws. Usually you discover flaws in your initial design, and it also helps you to simplify things because your code needs to be testable and things like that. You usually end up with a much more simple design. TDD as a pure design tool doesn't really work for me. I don't know, maybe it's just me.
What do you think about peer reviews of the idea? When, let's say, you wrote down possible solution for the problem at hand,
mm-hmm.
and then you share it with your colleagues, with your teammates, friends.
I think it's great. You always get valuable feedback and you have to explain it, which makes you to go even deeper with your ideas because you have to explain it, you have to do it in specific words, and you have to present a solution that is easy to understand. So that forces you to even think more about the concept and mm-hmm. solidify everything. I really think that is a good idea. One problem that I have is that I tend to share too early. And sometimes I'm super eager to share the idea that I have, and the idea is still not baked, right? Mm-hmm. It's still too raw, and it's too early to share it. And then I have this feeling that it's going to be great, but then when I start to explain it, still not mature enough. I should wait and work on it a bit more before sharing it. But yeah, I think that's part of my character.
It also might depend on relationship with these people. Yeah. If they know you, or if you work with them for a long time, you could kind of see inside of the head of this person who presents something, right? You could see that there are other things which are meant to be there. Maybe they are not written down yet, but you could ask for them and so on.
I really like, probably you also know, the RFC approach that you can see in a lot of open source projects, because the person who is presenting the idea is forced to really think about it and write it down and explain it in a way that it's easy for the rest of the contributors to reason about it and provide constructive feedback. For people like me that are too eager to to share, I think it's a good thing because it forced you to sit down and write it down.
Not for every application that would work, but in some cases it's really helpful to force you to think one more time, to express your ideas to other people. And it also cool because it stays as a history. It doesn't matter how you store it, Google Docs, GitHub, Confluence, I don't know. But it stays and people could later refer to it.
And you can get a lot of people collaborating in the same issue, which is also great because you get more, you get different point of views, more ideas, nice collaboration usually.
But if people don't like what you propose? What is your reaction?
Totally fine. If the feedback is constructive, I'm totally fine. If they present a solution that is better than my solution and they have solid reasons, why not? You don't have to be the one with the right solution. Maybe you're the one that started the conversation, but that doesn't mean that you have to end the conversation.
That's right. If you're the one who reviews someone's solution, you have a right to complain only if you have alternative proposal.
Of course.
It's not just, I don't like it, and that's it.
Yeah, that's not constructive feedback, right?
Gut feeling, what do you think about this? That sometimes we pick solution to the problem based on this.
That's a tricky one because I use it a lot because I don't know, I've been around for some time and you develop this gut feeling. And the thing is, you know that the gut feeling is telling you something, but you have to invest the time to figure what that something is. Otherwise, you cannot explain it to the rest of your team, for example, and then it's useless. Because as you mentioned, you cannot go to the team and say, okay, I don't want to go down that road because I feel that is the wrong way. That is not a valid explanation.
Yeah.
So you can use your gut feelings because, yeah, they are there for some reason. But then you have to keep digging and provide a reason why they are there. And sometimes your fears are not based on anything. They are just fears that are there. I don't know why. You have to really explore and dig deeper until you find something that you can share and you can explain and you can reason about it. Now I'm remembering this refactoring patterns and mainly that they call, not the pattern, but they call it smells, right? Which is kind of gut feeling. But the good thing with those patterns is that some people already invested time on recognizing the pattern and give an answer to those gut feelings.
To summarize all these tricks and tips that we discussed today, whatever problem you have at hand, try to simplify it. Try to ask the question why. Try to think not right away in terms of actual solution implemented in whatever programming language and whatever classes, methods, and requests to somewhere. But think about abstract, think about architecture, these boxes and arrows pointing here and there. Draw it on the paper, on the whiteboard, whatever software you use for this. Experiment with tiny parts of it if it's necessary. Do a research to fill the gaps if you feel that you don't understand certain aspects. Ask questions. Ask your peers or the one who come up with the problem. To do a research, make sure that you time box it. Otherwise, you could spend a week on researching something, and then in the end of the week, you will know all sorts of things totally unrelated to the problem. But with time boxing, it's up to you to decide, could it be half an hour, 2 hours, half a day? It might depend on the project, but there must be a limit. And once it's done, so you have no time, do a quick recap or retrospective with yourself maybe, or maybe with your peers, discuss your discoveries and how they applied as a possible solution to the problem. So all these things should help you to solve problems more effectively, be more productive, and have more fun solving problems and creating new ones, of course.
True thing. And I think we forgot one, which is one thing, which is sleep on the problems. Sleep over the problem. Sometimes it's like you do this exploration, you do your time boxing, and you're still kind of stuck or not super happy with the current solutions that you have in place. You go to bed next day, first thing in the morning, everything fits, and you realize that you have a good solution. So yeah, sometimes you need to just relax, take some time, and leave some room for your brain to think.
That's it for today. Thank you for listening. In case of any questions, as usual, please send us an email. It's codeandbeyond@protonmail.com. This address is always in show notes and on our awesome, shiny new website, which is codeandbeyond, one word, .rocks, because it rocks. If you're listening to the podcast on Spotify, please don't forget and leave a rating to the show. That will help us to have more listeners and share the awesome things that we share here. Keep being amazing. Bye.
Bye.